chapter 10, now verse 1. I myself, Paul, that's pretty emphatic, I appeal to you by the meekness and the gentleness of Christ. I who am, this says humble here, I would like to make a slight distinction, it's very close, but humble is actually, this is tapenos, which means low, as distinct from high. So I don't want to make a big distinction, but lowly might be a better word. I who am not big or important or great, I'm just lowly, ordinary. Whereas humble, humility is not only tapenos, but tapenophrosune. It's a word, he'll use it. It's thinking of yourself as low. It's got a special nuance to it. So I'll just use the word lowly here by preference. I who am lowly when face to face with you, but bold towards you when I am away. That's not sarcastic, but that's what they're saying about him. Obviously, these people. Look, he's tough when he's at a distance, but when he's with you, he's as weak as water. Don't take notice of Paul. He's just nobody. You know, he comes on heavy and writes these big important letters, but when he comes, that's what they're, as it were, slinging off at them. So he includes it in his letter. So it's a bit towards sarcasm, but I don't think sarcastic is the right word. I, and now he appeals to them through the meekness and gentleness of Christ, I ask that when I am present, I need not show boldness by daring to oppose those who think we are acting according to human standards. He takes them on in this letter. If they reckon I can't be tough, tell them to watch out. Me, not because he's standing for the gospel, and he's not going to let that be mucked up. And if he needs to be tough to stand for the gospel, they better know he can be and will be. He doesn't want to be, and it's not natural for him to be like that. But the gospel is too important to worry what they think of him. Indeed, we live as human beings, but we don't wage war according to human standards, for the weapons of our warfare are not merely human. They have divine power to destroy strongholds. Do you remember that wonderful thing that Jesus said about the church? Thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church. And remember, the gates of hell, the gates of Hades actually, it's the underworld, not Gehenna, the gates of death actually, will not prevail against it. Remember that? It's a very terrific image. And get it, the church, in other words, is on the offensive. The church isn't defending itself against the raging of the world. World, death, evil, is like a gate of a city. And the church is actually, into the gate. The church is on the attack. In other words, the light is going to shatter the darkness. We've got a mission, Jesus is saying, and nothing will stand against the mission of the church. Love will prevail. Well, here's the same thing here. He's talking, using another image, but it's related. Power to destroy strongholds. People put up barriers to the truth. Well, the gospel will break them down. We destroy arguments and every proud obstacle raised up against the knowledge of God. Knowing God, we've done that so often, haven't we? It's a love thing. You only know by intimate communion. It's not head knowledge only. It includes that. But this is to know, means to be in communion with. And we take every thought captive to obey Christ. That's pretty good too, isn't it? So the philosophy of the world, and still with the church, we've got to be thinking with the times, and we've got to find language. Pope John the 23rd, in that wonderful introductory lecture he gave at the Vatican Council, was a magnificent document, and he knew what he was up against. He was up against a fairly intransigent curia, that liked everything to stay the same. The church has always been like this, so it'll always be like that, you know. And John the 23rd, I wish I could had brought the words with me, but they just flipped into my mind now. He talks about the substance of the doctrine, of course, is the same. Truth is truth. The substance. But the way it is expressed has to be communicating to people today. It has to connect. It has to stir. It has to make sense to the culture, to the people. And that'll vary from country to country, but it's got to keep relevant, hasn't it? And it's pastoral. So it was a pastoral council. It was about how do you communicate the wonderful truths that Jesus revealed, the wonderful realities about God and people. How do you communicate that to a 20th century person in wherever? England, Germany, the island of Futuna in the Pacific, Australia, wherever. How do you do that? That's what the council was all about. And that's what he's talking about here. Every thought, everything the scientists discover, everything that is discovered in any field, bioethics, all this, is it's all good. It can be abused, but it's all good, and we've got to see how to evangelize that world. Otherwise, we're not just repeating formulas that people memorize and die remembering and make no difference to their life, for heaven's sake. We are ready to punish every disobedience when your obedience is complete. When you want them to listen and heed, and if they're acting against the gospel, Paul is assuring them from somewhere up in Illyricum or the western part of Macedonia, I'm coming to Corinth, he says, and I'm going to meet this head on. And if they think I'm going to say, oh, I'm sorry, and mandy-pansy around the place, they've got something else coming to them, because this is about the gospel, and I'm going to preach it and say it and confront these people who are wandering around the place, stirring up trouble against the gospel. Let's have a look at the page there that I've offered you, just as a reflection. Sorry. As a reflection on this. This passage gives us an important insight into Paul's manner of relating to the community when he's among them. The accusation would have been impossible if he was authoritarian in any way. They wouldn't be accusing him of being weak, low, you know, unimportant, insignificant, whatever word you're going to put onto tapenos, if he had have been an authoritarian, bossy, driving person. You don't accuse those kind of people of being like that. You've got other accusations. So it would have been impossible to accuse him like that if he had have been an authoritarian character. He must have witnessed to the meekness and the humility of the heart of Jesus, who did not wish to bring any pressure on people other than the pressure of love, and who refused to meet aggression, whether verbal or physical, on its own ground. There's a wonderful document in the Vatican Council, too, on freedom. And the point it makes is that, and it's a terribly important point, is that truth must persuade according to its truth. You don't need someone behind it pumping it up and pushing it down people's throats or insisting on them accepting them. If it is true, it's powerful, isn't it? Just by being true. So it needs to be said. It needs to be said clearly. But you don't bring other pressures to bear on kids, teenagers, adults to conform by fear. I'm not saying the church has never done this or people in the church haven't ever done it. I'm not saying I've never done it myself and maybe you've done it. You know, we can fail by bringing in other motivations. But surely what we should be doing is speaking the truth in love persistently. It's got its own power. Well, that's what I guess I'm trying to say here. The only pressure you bring on people is the pressure of love, and who refuse to meet aggression on its own ground. No one with eyes open should have mistaken the meekness of Jesus for weakness. One of the virtues mentioned in verse 1 there is meekness. It's not a word, pardon me, just spending a minute on it, it's not a word that is current in our language. Shakespeare's full of it. It's the virtue of the king, the virtue that the king should have, meekness. And just to remind you, meekness means to be, it's powerful, but it's gentle. It's not weak. It's nothing to do with weakness. It's the power that a person might have, but it's exercised always gently. So Jesus, I am meek and humble of heart, means he's got the power of Jesus, but it's always gentle. And if you put power and gentleness together, you get this beautiful virtue of meekness. Witness, for example, the power of Jesus' love is standing up to the religious leaders. Nor should anyone have mistaken Paul's humility, for he was determined, as he says, to destroy every proud obstacle raised up against the knowledge of God. The point in this passage is that his method of destroying that opposition, while it ran the risk of his being accused by stronger, inverted commas, people of being weak, was in fact his way of imitating the Lord. Look at Jesus on the cross and imagine the high priest there saying, come down, you're all the ha-ha, etc. that you read about. Or Pilate washing his hands. Who of those people is actually weak and who's strong? Pilate is weak. He's not even game to speak the truth because he's afraid of the crowd, isn't he? Who say, if you do this, we'll report you to Caesar. So he's strong, he's got the power, he makes the decision, he dismisses Jesus and says, let him be crucified, washes his hands. But everybody looking knows he's weak. It's a weakness in him. That, okay, Jesus is there, victim, standing there, thorns on his head. Is he weak? He's standing there, innocent, strong, very strong, not willing to give in to this foolish game that everyone around is playing. So we know where real strength lies, and it doesn't have to be bullying. In fact, bullying is a sign of weakness, not of strength. The three virtues mentioned in this passage as being typical of Jesus: humility, though I've made a qualification on that already, meekness and gentleness. The word translated there, gentle, is epieikeia in Greek. And I don't, if you've ever studied any moral theology, and some of you might have, you've probably heard of epikeia. It's a technical term in moral theology coming as a derivation from this Greek word. And epikeia means, say I was a... So gentleness is a little bit too vague for it. Say I was a magistrate in a court. Some of you may well have been that or be that. So I'm a magistrate in a court, all the facts are brought together, and by the law I have to make a judgment of guilt or not guilt and then determine what the appropriate punishment might be. Clemency is that virtue of a judge, and that's the best, where the judge takes everything into consideration. He doesn't just go by the book. He's not meant to do that and hopefully doesn't do it. He also takes in all the factors that might lessen responsibility and whatever else and makes a judgment that is fair and true but completely considerate of everything. That's the virtue of clemency. That's the virtue that he's talking about here. And the way that Greek was translated into Latin was clemens, hence the word clement or clemency. So humility, meekness and clemency are all central to the life of the disciple of Jesus. Humility, as lived by Jesus and by Paul, is essentially the virtue of one who accepts to be a child of God, who is confident in the love of his Abba, Father. Entrusting ourselves in this way to God's love, we are free to find security in this truth and not need the kind of security that is looked for in a life of self-reliance. If we are humble, we are free to turn our attention to others to delight in them, and to invite them to entrust themselves to God in childlike faith. No wonder Jesus said, remember when Jesus was talking about humility? He said, better have him facing that way. He said, anyone who brings himself down like a little child will be raised up by my Father. No wonder he said, when they asked him who was the greatest, he said, unless you change and become like a little child, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever becomes humble like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. The key image in the New Testament, and the only image in the Old, is of a child, for what humility is. It doesn't mean we're meant to be childish. We've got to mature, we've got to grow up, we've got to become responsible, we all know that. But the key element of a child that Jesus is focusing on is a child is utterly dependent. The child is totally dependent. The child knows it. And it's happy to be dependent because it's dependent on someone who loves the child. So it's in a beaut place. And aren't you in a beaut place? And the child is there, and it's open. Now the point Jesus is making is that we're all like that. The fact is that all of us adults are utterly dependent. Oxygen, love, take all these out of your life, you're dead, you've got nothing. We're all dependent all the time. So as mature adults, we are. Jesus puts the image of a child there, and that's humility. It's recognizing that I'm not self-reliant. I don't have to be self-reliant. And though my community keeps telling me to be self-reliant, the fact is I don't need to be. We have to be adult, but we have to receive grace. And grace is given. And even if it takes us to a cross, we remain, your Father, Abba, into your hands I commend my spirit. Thank you. How often we lose patience. In itself, this is understandable. But then instead of attempting to look into ourselves to discover why we react in this way rather than the many other ways that are possible, we tend to presume other people are to blame for our impatience, as though it was they who determined our responses. If I could just pause. Jung, if I'm allowed to mention Jung here, and I hope I am, this was one of Jung's great insights. I'm sure he wasn't the first to have it, but he put it so powerfully. You know, and when I first realised, I thought, of course, you do something to me, anything, good, bad, indifferent, whatever, I can respond to what you do. Theoretically, I can respond in 50 ways. I can respond by saying, oh, come on. I can respond with laughter. I can respond with anger. I can say, how dare you do that? I can, you know, there's just a million possible responses, theoretically. And if you had a million people here, they'd all respond differently. The fact that I respond this way to you has everything to do with me and little to do with you. You're the occasion. You've done something. But what you do, you take my point, of course you know it already, but it's terribly important because most people I meet, I suppose I'd say, at least a lot of people initially say, he made me angry. No one makes you angry. They don't make you angry. You're angry for reasons to do with you, with your memories, your past, your experiences, so that we've got to own our responses and think, why did I respond that way? Why didn't I respond in all these other ways? And the reasons for my not responding, I won't find them by looking at you. What you've done may be totally unfair. It was unfair that they crucified Jesus. He responded by saying, Father, forgive them, they don't know what they do. Someone else may have responded, the other thief responded with cursing. So, okay, that's the point I'm making. I guess it's an obvious one. To dare to look at ourselves, we need to be very... This is another beautiful point. God, I wish I think I wrote this well. Excuse me, but as I read it, I think that's not... It's terribly important. We need to be very gentle with ourselves. I hope you agree with this, because I'm certain of it, from dealing with myself, but mainly with other people, someone yesterday and the day, every day. And most people who are hard on others are terribly hard on themselves. They're not gentle enough with themselves. They think they shouldn't be like this. I shouldn't be doing this. I shouldn't, for heaven's sake. And they need my little way of saying it, please tell me later if you think it's hopeless. But I try and get people, I say, look, you know, if you had a young sister who'd done, say it's a woman I'm talking to, if you had a young sister who'd just done what you did, how would you speak with her? Nearly invariably, because they're good people, nearly invariably they're compassionate, thoughtful, helpful. Do you get me? They're all over this young sister trying to help her, you know, be okay. That's their reaction. But their reaction to themselves is to put themselves down. And if they put themselves down, they know inside their real self knows that that's wrong. It's wrong to do that. So their real self rebels against being put down. And do you see what's happening? Then they get angry, and they don't know why. And they get angry with this person, and they're really angry with themselves. And so it's too simple what I'm saying, but there's a lot of truth in it. And we've got to be just gentle. Truthful, don't let's avoid truth, but very gentle with ourselves and very loving to us. Love one another. What is it? Love your neighbour as you love yourself. And I think that might be pretty hard to be like that. But it's pretty wise, because if we're not like that with ourselves, I think we will be hard on others. Because we don't know what to do, we're trapped. To dare to look at ourselves, we need to be very gentle with ourselves. And this is possible only when we believe we're loved. Isn't this the central message of the gospel? Only thus can we learn the meekness that can bear with the sins of others and keep responding in love. In our insecurity, we tend to we tend to judge others without sympathy, without understanding, without clemency, there's our virtue, without realizing where they've been, without knowing, we don't know where they've been. They're behaving badly, and we're picking on them or talking about them behind their back or putting them down. And this person may be, I've used this image with you before, but, you know, the image of the prodigal son in a pig yard. And I'm in the middle of a pig yard, let's say, morally, or just everything about me. My life's all fallen apart and I'm right here in the middle. Well, I'm up to here in pig poop. Because that's what pig yards are like. And that's where I am. And then one day I might meet you, I might meet someone, I might try... I don't know what will happen, but there's the fence out there, and I take two steps away from the middle towards the fence, which is heroic, really. Like I'm walking towards the light, and it's really terrific. You come along, you don't know, somebody comes along and meets me here. Now here I'm up to my ankles, still in the pig stuff. I'm still in a mess. I'm still in the pig yard. You see me here, do you get it? And you judge me for being here. You shouldn't be there. Look at that person. Look at his life. Look at this. Look what they're doing. Look what he's doing at home, and look at the way he's doing it. And wouldn't you think, and wouldn't, and look at, and off we go. I hope you don't, but people do. And we judge this person who's here, not knowing that this person has taken two terrifically heroic steps that I or you have never taken in our life. He's come from there to be here. And if I'm here and you pick on me, can't you see what I'm going to do? At least it's terribly likely I'll say, well, bugger it or something, and I'll end up, what's the use? And I'll go right back to here. Whereas Jesus comes and meets me here and says, because he knows me, he says, God, that's terrific. You're doing so well. I'm still the same person. Do you get it? I'm still behaving badly, but I'm doing so well. And he says, hey, look, good on you. This is terrific. You know, and then I think, oh, well. And then he gives me the strength to take two more steps. And I might get to the fence. And through the barbed wire, and I'm free. So these are the kind of virtues that Paul is talking about in this passage. In our insecurity, we tend to judge others without sympathy, without understanding, without clemency, and without listening to Jesus who said, you shall not judge. It's understandable that we might find it hard to accept our own limitations, but there's no excuse for lashing out at others, either to blame them for who we are or what we do, or to impose on them our own limited judgment. We should pray for the joy to admire others when they excel, to thank God for it, and when they fail, let us recall how little we know of the pressures that have formed them in the past or under which they're now labouring. This doesn't mean that we are to seek to excuse other people's behaviour, but it does mean that we're called to judge their behaviour. We're never allowed to judge the person with compassion.